welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. I like that music. It's kind of nice and springy. And, you know, spring's going to be here sooner than later. And I guess we want to talk about getting ready a little bit for it. And then, you know, the cold weather is going to stay with us. You know, it's going to be cold in Wisconsin for several months. You know, March, April, May often are pretty cold. And then on the other end of the gardening season, it gets cold again. So how do we do a good job of gardening given our cold climate? And how do we do it organically? That's kind of what we're going to be talking about today. John Whitman's our guest. He's been a professional grower, an avid backyard vegetable garden for 50 years. And he's the author of this wonderful new book. It's called Fresh from the Garden, An Organic Guide to Growing Vegetables, Berries, and Herbs in Cold Climates. So there, and believe me, this is a huge book, and it is, he's a good writer and entertaining to listen to. And if you want to know about growing vegetables in a cold climate and do it organically, you have come to the right place, because I'm pretty sure John Whitman's going to have lots of great advice to offer. And questions, comments, experiences to share as we talk the vegetable garden, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page. Maybe you've got a photo of your garden or a special plant you want to show us. Go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page. And you can post it right there. And John Whitman, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
It's good to be with you.
Wow. I tell you what, I took a look at this book. You know, normally I sit down and read every book before I have the guest on the show, but that was not possible for me to do.
It's a big book.
It is a big book. We've got, what, 500 or so pages here?
Yeah, 500 plus pages and lots of information.
A whole lot of information, and about all kinds of vegetables. And we'll talk. You know, tell us a little about how you've got it organized. I frankly love it, because every vegetable that you talk about, for example, you've got special categories that you discuss.
Well, the idea is that when people go to a specific section, they can get all the information they really need in that section about that vegetable. So they're not flipping back and forth in the book, like, you know, in one area, how much water should I give the vegetable, or what kind of mulch should I apply, and how thick. You just go to that section, and it's there, so you don't have to keep flipping back and forth. That's the main idea. I don't like to have to work when I'm reading. And, you know, and it's all in very simple language. This is not a technical type of book. It's not, I mean, it has technical information in it, but it's very easy to understand.
Yeah, you have a great writing style.
Thank you.
I really, as I started reading through it, I thought, oh, man, this guy knows how to write. In terms of just thinking about cold climates, you know, obviously here in Wisconsin, we've got a cold climate. What are some of the main challenges you see and write about associated with growing in a cold climate?
Well, there are two main challenges. The first, obviously, is that we have a later spring than they do in the south, and we have an earlier fall. So the growing season is short. But the other thing that people don't really think about is that we have more sunshine and longer days in the summer than they do in the south. So you really have two elements that you have to take into consideration when you're choosing plants, particularly what we would call long or short day plants. And so the sun affects plants, and obviously how cold it is. And we consider cold weather to be anything under like minus 20 and below. that covers a good section of the country, believe it or not. Although I understand this year it's all over the place. So I don't know. A cold climate might be warm in the middle of February, which is not good for plants. But overall, it's minus 20 or lower.
As you're thinking about design, garden design. Do you give that a lot of thought when it comes to the growing season, maybe even extending the growing season?
I think each person has to give that a lot of thought, considering the overall layout of their land. There are some areas where you have very small backyards, and there are other areas where you have huge amounts of space to work with. And then also, the idea that you have to have your garden all in one place is nonsense. I have probably four or five different areas in my particular landscape where I grow vegetables, and I also grow them in pots on the deck. So when you're thinking about design, it doesn't necessarily have to be the way people think of perhaps a perennial bed where you've got a specific design plant next to plant next to another plant. In vegetable gardening, herb gardening, and so on, you can have all different types of combinations.
Yeah, I like that. I really, I've kind of flipped the book open, and the first page I saw was, oh, here's a something growing in a pot. So I thought,
right.
Okay, you're not averse to mixing it up.
Not at all. In fact, I think it's necessary in a lot of places. I mean, when you think about city gardeners, I mean, they just don't have the space that someone in a rural area has, yet they can grow an incredible number of different vegetables. And people just don't think of that right away. But people who have been doing it for years know that it can be done. They've been doing it.
Yeah.
And they've been doing it successfully, and they've been getting, you know, nice little crops, not huge crops. We're not talking about trying to become a mini farmer. We're just talking about having fun, eating fresh vegetables, and eating healthy vegetables.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, I raise more vegetable or more tomatoes than I could possibly eat.
Most people do. More cucumbers or zucchini.
Yeah, zucchini.
Zucchini is the one that everybody is trying to give away.
I don't grow zucchini anymore because you can always get it from the neighbors.
That's what happens, especially in groups where, you know, they swap foods. People say, please, do not bring zucchinis.
Oh, how long did it take you to put this thing together? I mean, 50 years? you've been gardening for 50 years.
I have been gardening for 50 years, and, you know, I didn't know that I was organic gardening. I mean, I really didn't. I mean, the term organic gardening is relatively new. When I grew up, I was just gardening, and I was using organic products. And I didn't have the money to go out and buy all these different types of chemicals and sprays and everything. And so I was lucky. I had was living in a rural area, and I had access to all sorts of manures and things. And so I was growing an organic garden well before I knew what an organic garden even was.
Yeah.
And I've been doing it a long, long time, and I've done it in a lot of different places in the north. And all I can say is that it's experience that teaches you the most, but it really is helpful to have like a mentor, and in this case, the book is the mentor, and it's nice to have that there because you have so many questions as you go along. You say, oh, what should I be doing with X, Y, or Z, and you don't know. So it's nice to have the answers in front of you if you can just turn to the page and say, oh, okay, I wondered how many weeks ahead of time I should start this plant, or should I really put this plant out this early? You know, should I plant the seeds this early? Will basil die if I buy it from the, you know, from the local nursery and then I want to plant it and it's still cold out? What do I do? You know, that kind of thing. So there are all sorts of questions that people have and can get easily confused.
Well, speaking of questions, if you have a question as you listen to John and I talk, I hope you'll join in. John Whitman, our guest, and he is the author of Fresh from the Garden, An Organic Guide to Growing Vegetables, Berries, and Herbs in Cold Climates. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page, title, The Larry Mealer Show. Certainly love to hear from you. As you think about varieties that sort of thing. Are there any plants that surprise people as good cold climate plants?
I don't know whether there's anyone that's special that stands out as a great cold climate plant. I think the majority of plants that I'm talking about can be grown successfully And then we're talking about 150 plant groups, so that's a lot of different plants and 1,700 varieties. But obviously, plants that you can plant early are a big advantage, such as peas or spinach and so on. And plants that you can keep in the garden late and just cover and actually dig up in the fall, like parsnips or carrots, are great for late-season vegetables. So, I mean, each vegetable has its pluses and its minuses, but, you know, they're all good. And some of them are more difficult to grow than others, but they're certainly delicious. And when you're growing them organically, you're not using sprays that are toxic. And you know that when you bring them indoors and wash them off and cook them quickly or properly, you're going to get great nutrition, and you're not going to get any of the toxic elements that you would get from some of the other produce that you might pick up in the grocery store.
Yeah, you didn't mention potatoes, but I sort of thought of potatoes as you were talking about different varieties, because there's not, to me, I just love you grow potatoes and taking them, digging them out, and then taking them in and cooking them up right away. There is nothing better. Those potatoes are the best tasting potatoes you're ever going to eat, as far as I'm concerned.
It's funny that you should say that, because that's how I started gardening. My mother handed me a bunch of potatoes that were sprouting, and she said, go dig a hole out, you know, out in the garden area and plant these things. I said, what do you mean, dig a hole? She said, go dig a hole and throw them in. And I said, oh, okay. And she said, then cover them up. And I said, okay. Well, I didn't know what I was doing. I just went out, dug a hole, threw them in there. And then over the season, I watched things happening. Plants began to grow, and I thought, gee, that's odd. You know, I'm not doing anything. I didn't do anything to help them at all. And then they got really big, beautiful green leaves that were kind of puckered, and then all of a sudden they died off. And I went inside and said, oh, the plants are dying, you know. She said, no, no, you did everything right. Now just go out there and dig them up. And I went out and I dug them up, and I couldn't believe from the few potatoes that she gave me how many I had. And that's what hooked me on gardening. So it is interesting that you mentioned it. And it didn't come to mind right away until you said that.
You know, and I knew you were a good guy when I saw you mention Ruth Stout as well in your book.
Yeah. She is quite a character. I mean, when you read about her and read her stuff, she really had her own thing going, and she was a remarkable person, just as Rodale was. He was so far ahead of his time. And, I mean, there's some really great people out there who are no longer with us, but who were tremendous inspirations to me. I mean, I read all sorts of stuff as a kid. And most kids aren't into gardening that much, but you'd be surprised if you can get them into the garden. They really like it. And I have a granddaughter, particularly in the fall when we're picking raspberries. That's the first thing she asks when she comes over. Can we go out and get raspberries from the garden? And I say, sure, of course we can. And she picks, you know, some. Not all of them, of course. That would be asking too much. Just enough so that she can have a bite or two and a few extras and go in and proclaim how many raspberries she picked, you know, from the garden. So, you know, you got to have a sense of humor. But it's so much fun. And, you know, the food tastes so good. As you were talking about the new potatoes, yeah, often they have very thin skins when you get them out of a home garden compared to in a store. I mean, they really are delicious.
Oh, there's nothing better for me. John Whitman is our guest today. His book, Fresh from the Garden, An Organic Guide to Growing Vegetables, Berries, and Herbs in Cold Climates. Every one of our phone lines is filled, so we'll take a call in just a minute here. I'm Larry Mueller. Lexi Brode, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network. Next week on Garden Talk, we'll take a look at fragrant plants and answer your gardening questions, so I hope you'll join us for that. Right now, though, we're taking a look at organic gardening in cold climates, which is what we have here, and our guest is John Whitman, author of Fresh from the Garden. That's the main title of the book. And let's take some calls, John. Let's Esty and Madison up first here. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've been growing vegetables organically for many years, and I agree with everything that you say. It's wonderful in so many ways, and the food is so good, and I would add you can also grow your own herbal teas organically. That is actually pretty easy. But my question is, I am fairly new to fruit trees, And last year, bugs got my apples and my peaches, and I still ate them, but, you know, I had to cut out the ugly and bad parts. And so I'm wondering if you can give advice on what to do about bugs and fruit trees.
Yeah.
Well, I don't really talk about trees in this particular guide. But I do know a little bit about growing trees, but I would say that that's not the focus of the book. I know my next-door neighbor, she actually wraps her apples very early in the season to protect them from insects because they're notoriously, they're the kind of tree that, you know, bugs just love. But I don't really have the kind of experience that you would want from a person to answer your question, because that's not what I'm focusing on here.
Okay. So,
sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Let's go to Henry in Oneida next. Henry, hello to you.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question, because as soon as the snow's gone, we start prepping the ground. And in years past, well, we never use any kind of weed killer or anything. It's all organic, mostly chicken poop and stuff like that. But we were thinking this year, and we'd have to do it early on, to cover the garden space, which grows everything from tomatoes to garlic, well, everything that you usually grow in a garden. But we wanted to cover the ground with cardboard to keep down the weeds, mostly chickweed, which takes over the garden. Are there too many chemicals in cardboard to where the food wouldn't be organic?
No, I would till up the ground very lightly if you have a tiller. If you don't believe in tilling, don't do it. Then I'd rake it out smooth. I'd get rid of all the debris, and I'd lay out the cardboard. And I wouldn't use any glossy cardboard if possible, but regular cardboard. It doesn't have chemicals that are going to harm your plants. And you can also use cardboard as a mulch around plants once you've planted them. So go ahead and do it. And then cover it up, preferably with an organic mulch like shredded leaves, which are plentiful in the north. And it'll look great, and it will be very effective at keeping weeds down.
Hey, well, thank you. Thank you for the time.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You know, that's one of the things. It's nice to collect all those leaves in the fall and pile them up, and then you can use them for mulch over the just a mulch without cardboard or a mulch with cardboard.
Well, I'm like a little mouse running around the neighborhood picking up those bags that are filled with leaves, and then I take them home and I run a lawnmower over them, and then I place them in a big pile, and I use that next year as mulch. It's just fabulous stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Richard in Milwaukee, let's turn to you now. Hi, Richard.
Oh, thanks so much. You know, it's depressing when we're using organic elements in our garden, and then my neighbors use pesticide on their lawn when they have companies come and spray, and they waft over on our garden. It's a depressing thing rather than using corn gluten on their lawn. But anyway, the reason I'm calling, thank you, is could you talk a little bit more about some early things you can put in your garden? You mentioned peas, some of the early things that can be put in, please.
Sure.
Well, you can put in a number of leafy vegetables in very early, and that's where I would start. Peas are, of course, one of the very earliest, and they're also one of the best if you pick them when they're at the right stage. And as to your problem with the spray, I would give that person some vegetables each year and ask them if they wouldn't mind spraying with something less toxic. It's a really delicate situation. But it is one of the main problems of organic gardeners in tight quarters when your house is next to another house, because people do use sprays to kill dandelions, and I think you need to have a nice friendly chat, but do give them a bunch of vegetables, and maybe they'll respond by not killing yours.
Peas are a great early season, and different kinds of lettuces do well as well in the early season, do they?
They really do, and I have a chart in the book, actually, that outlines all of the different vegetables, when to start them, and which ones are best early, really early in the season, then a little bit later than mid-season, because there are warm season vegetables that if you plant too early, they'll die out or they won't grow well, and you probably should start them indoors and plant them out after the temperature is like 70 or so. So there are, when you're talking, let's say, in this particular guide, 150 different plant groups, well, obviously there are dozens of potential plants that you can get in early and a little bit later and then throughout the season.
Yeah. And that's nice. When the peas get done, out the garden they go, and you put something else in there.
That's the whole idea of using the space wisely in a garden. It's called successive planting, and some people interplant plants with the others. Some people plant something that's going to come in later right next to the peas, and then when they pull the peas out, which have already added nitrogen to the soil, then they have another crop growing. So it's a progression.
Yeah, it's a win-win. Radishes, I like to put. I could put radishes in pretty early too.
You can put them in almost when the snow melts.
Yeah, I know, and they're
so good.
Those first ones are so good. Oh, thanks,
and
Richard.
They're quick.
Yeah,
you don't have to wait forever. You know,
that's right.
I mean, just to give you an example, I just went to the page for very hardy vegetables that you can get in: arugula, asparagus, beets, Belgian endive, broad beans, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, carrot, cauliflower. I mean, I can go on. There's like 20 or 30 plants that you can get in early. So I mean, it's not like you can't start early. You can.
Yeah. Thanks, Richard. Appreciate the call.
Thank you so much.
Let's go to Jan in Viroqua next. Jan, hi to you.
Good
Thanks
morning.
For calling.
I'm very well. I hope you are too. I bought a house this past fall, and one of the great selling points was it came with an outrageously productive Concord grape vine, which appears to me to have more than one main stem, because it goes along like a 10-foot fence and up over a trellis that covers the whole porch. And I thought, I didn't know I had to do anything with it, but I ran into somebody who said you have to prune Concords, and you have to prune them before they bud out. And you cut them way back, and then they regrow all these crazy vines that are covering, like, probably 100 square feet or more.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Do I need to prune my Concord grapes?
Yeah, you need to get a primer or a book that's on fruits, and particularly there are some on grapes that are very good, and they'll tell you exactly step by step what to cut off and how to do it. And you need very sharp pruners, and you need to get rid of quite a bit of the foliage. So it'll tell you what year to do each thing, and it's a progression, and you'll get good grapes. The only thing about grapes in northern climates is we're beginning to get different types of insects that can cause problems, but you can handle them. But again, I do not cover grapes or kiwi or some of the other fruits in this particular guide.
Jan,
those almost require a book on their own.
One of the really good resources that we've got right here in Wisconsin is through UW Extension.
Right.
And it's a publication called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin.
Oh, great. Okay.
And you can just go online to learningstore.uwex.edu.
Okay.
And the title of the publication is Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. Lots of rave reviews for that particular.
Wonderful. I have a second question.
Okay.
I have ordered a kind of pea that I've never used before, and it's supposed to be super, super hardy, and it's often used as a cover crop, but it's a good eater also. So, do you know what I'm talking about?
Do you know the name of the pea?
No, it's one from, it's a Scandinavian one.
Well, if you're using it as a cover crop, are you going to eat the peas?
Yes. Okay, I will call you back with the name, if I may, that way, because it's a super hardy, tasty pea.
All right, well...
Well, the critical thing is it's the same as with other peas. You're going to get it in really early, correct? It's in the same family as the typical garden pea, correct?
Yes, but this one you can plant at the end of the summer, and it'll grow into the winter.
Oh, well, that is super hard.
Back.
Yep, that is super hard.
And then you can also have, you have two choices. You can eat the peas, or you can just spade or till the peas into the ground, and they'll add nitrogen to the soil.
But I don't know why you wouldn't want to. You could plant them early, too, if you want to eat them.
I would plant them early.
Yeah, I'd get them in as soon as you can get into the soil almost, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would, because not only do you get the crop, you then can, if you want to, you can spade or till in that material, that plant material that's left after you've picked the peas.
Yeah.
And that's really helpful to your soil.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
All right.
And I will call back and tell your person on the phone what the name is so you can...
All right. So we'll know, because now people are wondering, what the heck is the name of that pea? So, yeah, call Lexi back and tell Lexi what it is. And she'll
I'm wondering,
her.
Too.
Yeah, we're all wondering now. So we Jan, we need to know this. So you call back, okay? Thank you very much for calling. And what about you? You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We've got some open lines. Get you on pretty quickly. Let's go to Perry in Eau Claire next. Perry, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I've been gardening for quite a few years and switched over to using more organic fertilizer, such as I use the ashes from my wood stove and blood meal to get my garden growing better. And since then, I've switched now to lasagna gardening, which touched what you touched on earlier with putting down cardboard in the fall, then covering my entire garden with 2 feet of leaves, liming it, and then let it break down over the winter, and then in the spring, planting in that. And I've also switched over to starting my own heirloom seeds from scratch. Now, my problem is that my plants have grown to such excessive size that I'm wondering if I could find a way to get the fruit to grow more vigorously at the end. I still get a lot of produce, but my tomato plants, excuse me, are now over 7 feet tall, and my squash leaves are like 2 feet across. It's just enormous.
Well, that sounds pretty good to me.
Sounds like a lot of nitrogen in that soil.
Yeah.
Well, my
are you getting good crops of the vegetables you're after, stuff, or just the foliage?
Gardening, the amount of growth is just out of control. I mean, it's good in a very good way. My tomatoes are just, I had to build my own cages out of reinforcing mesh just to hold them up. But is there any way to get anything that would get me more towards a little bit more, you know, produce at the end, or is it just that don't complain because things are going good?
I think it sounds great what you're doing. Lasagna gardening, we do talk about in Fresh from the Garden. You're basically growing plants in an active compost pile. That's more or less what it boils down to. And because you've got a lot of warmth, you've got a lot of moisture, and as the plants are decomposing, they're giving off nutrients. That's why you're doing so well. I mean, you're doing fabulously. If you're getting a lot of produce as well as a lot of foliage.
Sounds like he's not, though.
You're not.
He's not getting a lot of produce, and he wants more produce. It sounds to me like he's got an overly rich, a nitrogen-rich soil.
I would certainly say that maybe you should be adding more leaves, and typically what people call brown matter, to the soil. It has more carbon in it, less nitrogen. Mix that in. And if you've got too much nitrogen, you're going to get a lot of foliage and not much in the way of produce. And that's what I didn't understand, whether he was getting good produce or not.
Yeah, he said he wants more produce.
He's got to cut back on the amount of green materials that he's putting in, green like lawn clippings and, you know, weeds and anything that you know, has a lot of nitrogen in it.
Yeah, so you want to, and if you're going to use those materials, you might want to just make a compost pile and let them compost a while, wouldn't you?
I don't see why not. I mean, you certainly can compost them for a good year, and then they break down into a material called humus, and that really does add very fluffy material to the garden, makes it a lot more aerated, better structure. It's great for the garden. Yeah, you could compost all those things first, but he is doing a lasagna-type style gardening, and I understand what he's doing. But he's basically growing things in an active compost pile. It used to be called sheet composting. It's very similar. I don't know exactly what materials he's been adding, but he's been adding, obviously, nitrogen-rich materials.
Yeah, for sure. And when you say lasagna gardening, it kind of went over it, but maybe just mention again what's involved in it. You do cover that in your book.
I do. Well, lasagna gardening is basically building up materials over a period of as many years as possible so that you're raising the level maybe an inch or two or three or five. Some people put down as much as a foot of materials, and these are all organic materials that you're adding one on top of the other. And they can be leaves, they can be weeds, they can be anything that was once growing, once alive, they're adding to that pile. And they call it lasagna because, you know, you're adding things in one layer and then another layer and another layer over a period of time, sometimes many, many years. And it breaks down. So I just call it essentially an active compost pile.
There you go. Makes good sense. Perry, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Dave in Oshkosh a chance to grow chime in here. Let's go there. Dave, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. So in the past, I've already grown potatoes by just pushing them in the ground a little bit and keep layering them with straw as they grow through until they're completely grown, and then I just pull them out. So I've got a question on what type of potatoes, if I can do that in my compost bin, because I throw it full of leaves in the fall. They compost down to about a quarter of what I had, and I thought maybe because of lack of room, I could just shove these potatoes into that and keep covering them until they grow to their the height that they need to be.
Well, if you've got a solid base, I would say yes. If it's still composting and it's very, very hot, I might not push that. But if you've got like an older compost pile, I don't see any reason why you can't plant potatoes in that and get a terrific crop. And you can keep adding some mulch around the plants or soil or other compost if you've got dual or triple compost bins. I would wait a little bit on it. I wouldn't do it in a steaming pile.
Yeah. The last few years, I've done some straw bale gardening, and we always got that straw. You know, there's some that sits out over the winter, and then I sort of piled it up in a pile in a corner, and I got some potatoes, and I threw them kind of in the pile or under the pile a little bit and just let them grow, and got quite a few potatoes, as a matter of fact. It was sort of like Ruth Stout used to do.
I've done the same thing. I've tried growing potatoes in about 10 different ways. And I've grown them on a bed of leaves and then covered them up. And I've got beautiful potatoes with extremely thin skin. So they were just terrific fresh potatoes. They weren't good for storage, but they were great eating. And I've tried the straw method, and that worked fine, too. A potato is a remarkable plant. It's just really interesting, you know, and it's very productive. So, I mean, there isn't just one way. In fact, in the potato section, I've got about five different ways of growing potatoes.
Yeah, absolutely. Dave, thank you.
What type of potato would I use? Can I just use potatoes from the store that I have left over? Do I want to fertilize, and how do I know when they've reached their maturity?
Okay.
Well, they reach their maturity when they die back. They'll turn sort of a yellowish color, and then they'll turn really brown. And at that point, with a spading fork, not a spade, but a spading fork, just start from the outside in and dig into the center, and you'll find little potatoes, and you'll find medium-sized and really large potatoes. What potato you choose, well, that, you know, there are a number of really, really good potatoes, and I have a list of about, I think, 20 or so in Fresh from the Garden, and they're used for different things. Some are really good for baking, some are good for boiling and making potato salad, and some are really good for storing. Some come in early, some come in late. So it's almost impossible for me to tell you exactly what variety you should choose. You should choose it by all of these different elements that are important to you. When it comes in, how fast, you know, what you're going to use it for, what color you like. Do you like a specific color? I mean, there are all sorts of ways of judging a potato.
Yeah, that's for sure. If you want, you know, like russet Burbanks are, you know, we grow a lot of Burbanks here in Wisconsin. And that, for example, I use those for baking. And I don't know if you do or not, John, but then there, as you say, there's, I love these little, the small yellow ones that get
Like Yukon Gold or
Yukon Gem? I had some Yukon Gold last year, and boy, they're good right straight out of the garden.
They are good. Did you pick them a little on the early side, or did you let them mature?
I picked them early.
Yeah, well, that's what a lot of people do because they can get pretty big. Everybody thinks Yukon Golds are tiny, but and they can be, but they can get really big too. So a lot of people start taking off the young potatoes a little bit before they're mature, which anybody can do. And he mentioned something about buying potatoes from the store. They have a growth inhibitor on them, and there's a potential, just a potential, that they could be diseased. So I've grown them many, many times from the store. I have to be honest, I have. But there's always that chance, so just be aware of that.
Yeah, and they're, you know, most of your garden centers in the spring, you're going to have seed potatoes that you can purchase and get a good look at what they look like when they're ready to eat. And that's kind of a way that I've always gone, too.
And they might be sprouting, too, which is a big help.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Dawn in Delavan, your turn. Hi, Dawn.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
Well, I love to grow tomatoes, and I never have too many. I generally don't have enough because I love to can them, and I eat them all winter long. My problem is I only have one spot that I can grow vegetables. And is it a bad thing? I've heard that you should not grow tomatoes in the same spot every year. I have had an issue with leaf wilt. And can that overwinter and disease the plants the next year, or can I actually grow them in the same spot every year?
You have had a problem already.
Yes.
So that's an indication that maybe somehow you might want to start growing them in containers.
Okay.
Have you thought of that?
I have thought of it, but I thought, well, how am I going to get enough tomatoes if I put them in a container?
Well, you have to have a lot of containers, and they still would take up about the same space as where you would grow the tomatoes. And it is a bit expensive going out and buying, you know, fancy pots, but you can get large plastic pots and use very good mixes and grow your tomatoes in the pots, and you don't have to worry about that soil.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I grow tomatoes in pots.
Yeah, I do,
and
too.
They're very productive.
And I get very good yields out of the straw bale tomatoes that I grow, too.
Yes, well, that's another decomposing pile, so to speak. I mean, you're doing a little bit of lasagna gardening there, too.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with John Whitman. John has been gardening for 50 years, and he's got this great new book out. It's called Fresh from the Garden, An Organic Guide to Growing Vegetables, Berries, and Herbs in Cold Climates. You can join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at gardening here in our cold climate of Wisconsin with our guest, John Whitman. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way. John's the author of Fresh from the Garden, An Organic Guide to Growing Vegetables, Berries, and Herbs in Cold Climates. About a little over 500 pages. I tell you what, there's a lot of great information in his book. Again, the number 800-642-1234. Had an email from Lori. She asked if you could recommend any vegetables or herbs that can be grown in pots in a shady balcony.
Shade is a real problem.
Yeah. yes, it is.
It really is. You could get by with growing some mint. It'd probably do quite well. And it'd be fun. It's a colorful plant. It has nice leaves, wonderful scent. I don't know whether she's talking about on a terrace or
She says a balcony.
In the garden itself.
Shady balcony, she says. So
balcony.
Yeah, shady balcony.
I'm assuming it's maybe off the ground somewhere.
Yeah, more than likely.
Yeah, I would say that's more like a potted plant she could try. She could try any herbs she could try, and she might be successful. I don't know how much sun she's got, but I would try some herbs because they do well overall in pots, And not all herbs, but most of the smaller ones are pretty good in pots.
And
so I'm not giving her a great answer, because shade and plants in general are, you know, just they don't like shade very much. You can grow lettuce in shade, but you won't get a bumper crop. You could grow watercress, strangely enough, which is an offbeat plant, but it has to be kept moist, and it's kind of hard to find. And I would say, you know, as I say, I'm not being as helpful as I'd like to be on that one, because shade is a problem.
I think you're right about herbs, though. I mean, you think about all the times people grow herbs in their house,
mm-hmm.
in pots, and
mm-hmm.
Certainly you're not getting the kind of sun that you would get if you had it, you know, outside, not under a tree anywhere. So I like your idea of experimenting with different herbs.
And you can keep them trimmed. They don't, how much space she's got, I don't know. But you can trim herbs pretty well. Not all of the herbs react well to heavy trimming, but a lot of them do fine when they're trimmed. It's just an idea.
Yeah, just an idea. And by the way, we had Jan that called earlier about those peas, and she called back and said the peas that she's talking about are Austrian winter peas. So Austria, it's a pretty cold climate. So I don't know those peas. So Austrian winter peas, those are the peas that Jan was growing in very, very cold conditions. And then Chris on Facebook mentioned that he keeps his lettuce bed going into December. He puts an old down comforter on it at night and on cloudy days.
I'm wondering whether he's growing them in raised beds so that he can put that cover over without crushing the lettuce, or whether he's just simply throwing it right over the lettuce beds or not. That's interesting.
It is. You know, he's got an old comforter, and that's what he uses to extend his season. So that's pretty cool.
Well, at least he's using a fabric.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people will say, oh, just throw plastic over your plants. No, don't do that. Use some sort of material, you know, that will, it'll, if he's doing it at the right time of day, which I assume he is, I don't know, it's better to do it when the plants have warmed up after it's a little bit sunny during the day, and then throw them on before evening. Again, into December, it's pretty amazing. It's not probably all that warm during the middle of the day. So I'm kind of chuckling to myself thinking, that's pretty good. But lettuce can stand quite a bit of cold.
Yeah. Yes, it can.
Parsnips can, too. So can a number of plants. Carrots. And, I mean, people would be surprised.
You know, I always enjoyed coming out to the garden in the spring where there was always a few onions.
Mm-hmm.
That don't make it, you know, I don't get in. And in the spring, you can go out to the garden, and those are the, you know, they've got a different little bulb on them now, and you can and pull them out and eat them. The perfect thing.
Why not? It's kind of fun, isn't it?
Yeah,
those are the kinds of surprises that you never know quite what's going to be there. And, I like that, too. I also like it when things self-seed, and all of a sudden I see little plants growing, and I can tell right away, oh, that's a cilantro, you know, and it's growing, and I don't have to worry about planting cilantro now. They're just doing fine. They're self-seeded. So you never know what you're going to find in the garden in the spring, and I think that's a great surprise.
Jennifer in La Crosse has something for us. Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Of course, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
We bought a house in autumn of 2015, and it came with lots of lovely flowers and four garden boxes. One of the garden boxes is separate from the other three. It's in the back, just outside our back door, but it is just filled with mint. And while we absolutely love mint, we're looking at a 3x4 box that is nothing but mint.
It's probably nothing but mint. I bet it didn't start that way.
Exactly.
No, it didn't. It spreads like crazy. It's got these roots, if you want to call them roots, rhizomes, soles, whatever.
So,
but they move off to the side and they just fill everything.
So I was impatient and I ripped out some and I thought, I know this is wrong. I'm just going to spread all of this stuff because literally there's mint growing all around the house, which, again, is great. Looking at the different options for getting rid of it, the one I've almost decided on is covering it with a couple of layers of cardboard and letting it set over the summer so that everything will die for the most part. But I'm wondering if you have a different suggestion that will be faster.
Yeah, the fastest one is just to take a garden rake and just yank it all out. And you'll leave a few behind, and just when they come up, just yank it out. Just dig it out.
Yeah.
That's the fastest. The other way of killing it is the way you're talking about. You can put cardboard down, or you can put clear plastic down and just put stones over the clear plastic. And that'll kill it pretty fast. But, I mean, really, by far and away the fastest is just get rid of it. Just yank it out.
Yeah, and don't let it get started outside the box.
Yeah, be ruthless. If you don't want it anywhere but in the box, and even if you don't want it in the box, take it out of the box and plant something else there. Save some mint. I mean, unless you don't like mint, save some mint and just keep it in a pot and put the pot down into the soil. But again, it's tricky. Don't let the stems reach down and touch the soil, because they'll take root wherever they touch the soil.
Yep.
Yeah, and that was the plan, was to actually put it into a pot and then sink it back down, so at least the roots would be contained a bit. But I wanted a fast way so I could utilize that space. We have a tiny, tiny yard. So thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well, again, keep your pot about an inch or so above the surrounding soil and watch those stems as they start to flop down.
For sure, because they will. They will flop. Phil in Menasha, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi there. My question is with growing storage carrots or carrots for storage. If I look at my desired harvest date and then I work backwards from what the date to maturity is, it puts me in the middle of July for planting. And to me, that seems a little bit late. I've heard some advice from people that if I plant them too early and they have too much time to mature, that their storage will be inhibited.
Yeah, they
and
get woody.
I'm wondering what your opinion is on this.
Well, if you do plant them early, the thing about carrots is as they mature, they get a core inside. So the outside is often tender. The inside is kind of tough.
Yeah.
If that's not a problem for you, you can core them and cut them into four pieces and cut the core out. But if you're going to store them, I think starting late is better. But, you know, it's a little tricky in the summer. You've got to really keep those seeds moist. And what I do is I mix in a little either compost or peat or something, vermiculite. Doesn't matter, anything that will hold moisture with the seeds. And it keeps the soil a little bit cooler, and it keeps it moister. But each day, go out and make sure that you're keeping the area that you're planting moist until they're growing pretty well. And then after they're growing well, thin them out to about where you want, put some more mulch down, and keep them growing right till the end of the season, and you can cover them up. We talked about this earlier.
Yeah.
Cover carrots up. And you can then start digging them up as you want them, and you can bring them indoors and eat them, or you can... Again, you can store them in a different way, like, I don't know how cold your garage is, but if it's partially heated, you can store them in moist leaves or moist peat or moist sawdust. There are lots of ways of extending the harvest, but I think you do want to start a little bit later with the carrots.
Yep. There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Tyson in Menominee, it's your turn. Hi, Tyson.
Hi. Good morning, I guess, still. I have had a love-hate relationship with cucumbers over the last number of years. 2 years ago, I had a ridiculous crop. Got 50 quarts of pickles. This last summer, not even enough to even bother pulling out the jars. So 2 years ago, I used a chain-link fence, grew them up. That was hard to navigate around. So this last year I used large tomato cages.
Sure.
And and apparently that didn't work. I did invest the money in that, so now I have an extra bunch of extra those.
So what's a good way to grow cucumbers in cold climates?
Well, I'm a little bit confused by his had great success one year and not so good success the next. Is it because of the way he grew them, or did they get a disease?
Or did they get something, a cold snap or something that...
Yeah, because cucumbers, first of all, cucumbers often produce, even when they're diseased, they produce pretty darn well. And I've used chain-link fences, and I've grown them right on the ground, just let them, you know, take up space. The problem there is exactly that. They take up space. But there are types of cucumbers that are bush varieties that they don't take up so much space, and you get tons and tons of cucumbers. So I don't quite know what went wrong.
But I think you're right about the bush. That might be something that Tyson would want to try, some bush-type varieties of cucumbers.
Yeah, and people think, oh, well, the bush, they're just really for picklers, and they are very good. Pickle bush is great for picklers. But you can let picklers grow a little bit larger, and they're still very good for slicing. I don't know why people think they aren't. But,
but they are. But they are. Oh, I tell you what. John Whitman is our guest here on Garden Talk. He is the author of Fresh from the Garden, An Organic Guide to Growing Vegetables, Berries, and Herbs in Cold Climates. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. So happy to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller, and pleased to have as a guest John Whitman. John is the author of Fresh from the Garden, An Organic Guide to Growing Vegetables, Berries, and Herbs in Cold Climates. It's published by the University of Minnesota Press. And I tell you what, University of Minnesota Press does a really nice job. And John's done a really nice job putting together. How many different vegetables, John, do you have in this book?
Well, over 150 vegetable groups, probably 1,700 or so varieties.
Yeah, it's an
amazing. So it's a big book.
It's over 500 pages with some great photography as well in it. I love the photos of the various vegetables that you've got.
Thank you.
In the book. Did you take those or
yes,
some of them?
Yes, I did.
Well, you did a nice job. You're a good
Thanks.
Photographer, too. Sally in Worthington, Minnesota has a question, interesting question for you. Let's go there.
All right.
Hi, Sally.
Hi. What a treat to be on your radio show. We live in southwestern Minnesota, which is the high plains of the prairie. And actually, we're on our way to Washington, D.C., and we just are traveling through Wisconsin. And we always love to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio and get your show. So now we're at a stop at a rest area north of Madison. And I guess my question is there such a thing as excessive tillage or too much tillage? I know there's a debate about tilling, and a lot of some of the farmers around us try to do no-till. We have a garden that's been organic for, 30, 40 years. It's about 20 by 70, and we have an old, a large toy built, and we always work it up at least once in the spring, try to mulch, and then we do it again in the fall and put usually a cover crop of rye or oats. But, as I said, we hear a lot about too much tillage and just wondering what your thoughts are for that.
Well, you sort of hit a hot button. As far as organic gardeners go, there are people who are totally opposed to tillage, and they've got lots of good reasons. And there are people who say, nonsense, you've got to get out there and till the garden because you've got to get the structure where you want it, nice and loose. So there's no right or wrong. I till still. I've been doing it for 50 years. My garden's great. I know people who absolutely will not till, and their gardens are terrific. So there's no right answer.
Okay.
The structure is affected by tilling. People claim that it damages the burrows of worms and so on and so forth. But I think your idea of doing it in the spring and fall is a really good idea. I wouldn't do it too early in the spring, though, if you've got clay soil. I don't know what kind of soil you have. But
some clay. Yep.
You do have clay. I wouldn't do it too early. I'd wait till the soil dries out a bit, and I'm assuming you already know that.
Yep.
That's helpful. Well, good. Thank you. And again, it's a treat to be part of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're Minnesota members, too. So.
Good for you, Sally.
And I know the University of Minnesota. I took the Master Gardening class last year, and you never get done learning. So thanks, and keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. Those master gardeners are great, aren't they?
Yeah, and you never stop learning. I mean, that idea is, I think, a great point to make. You're always learning.
Yep, in the garden for sure. Julie.
In the garden, yep.
Julie and Madison up next. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I'm not a master gardener, but every year you try a little more.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this pile of ash. I heard you mention ash earlier. And it's from actually burning oak leaves. And now, is that worthwhile at all for use in the garden?
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt anything if you spread it very thinly over the garden. I don't know how big your garden is. You don't want it thick. It changes the soil pH. In other words, it makes the garden a little more alkaline.
More alkaline, okay.
Yeah, a little.
Okay.
But if you put a lot on, then you could create some problems for yourself. But it's got nutrients in it. I wouldn't just throw it away.
Okay.
No, but really thin.
Thin.
Thin, thin, thin.
Okay, all right. I will attempt to do some of that.
In other words, don't take all your ashes and plop them in one spot.
and expect something to grow, huh?
No, that's not good.
You get something kind of like concrete, maybe.
Oh.
There you go. Thanks, Julie. Appreciate the call. Nina in Grays Lake, Illinois. Your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a sort of a strange problem growing cucumbers.
Okay.
To the point where I've even stopped trying because it's happened numerous times. I plant them, and they don't look like a normal cucumber. They turn out like little yellow, round, little golf balls.
Have you planted the same variety every time?
Nope. I've planted different varieties, and I've planted them in different places, and they come out round and yellow.
Wow.
You know what I do? And John can throw in his two cents, but one thing I do is I get myself a soil test. You have a soil and plant soil
mm-hmm.
testing
mm-hmm.
lab. I would send a soil sample in and tell them what you're growing and tell them what results you've got, and you may get something from that.
Okay. So you've never seen this before yourself? Or
I haven't. Have you, John?
No, I never have. And the other thing you could try, and this would be a fun experiment for you, is to get a little support in a large pot and plant seeds in there and then see what happens. Then you're finding out whether your soil's the problem or whether something else altogether is.
Yeah, that's another way to do it.
Yeah, the first time I thought, when I grew them, I thought, well, maybe they start out yellow. They're not right.
No, they don't start out yellow.
They just got bigger and rounder, and then they just turned to,
There may be, There may be a pathogen in the soil that's hanging around in the soil.
Okay.
Yeah, that could be creating that kind of something that's, you don't have.
What about your other plants? How do your other plants
do? I do well with mostly everything.
Yeah,
luck with cucumbers.
You have any black walnut trees in the area?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are they being grown right next to an area that's being sprayed by herbicides?
Not as far as I am aware. I will try putting them in a pot, though. I never thought of doing that.
Yeah, make sure you put a support in right at the time that you plant. And then, you know, you will know then whether it's a soil problem or whether you've got some other weird thing going on.
I'd still spend $10 and get a soil test done just to see what might be in there. Actually, for a more expensive test, you can get more than just nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, you can get other elements that may be present in the soil, at least at some of the testing labs that I'm familiar with.
You might also call your extension service agent and explain what's happening, and they may know of something odd that we don't know about.
Yeah, it may be something in your area, and certainly an extension, the horticulture agent from your area, if other people have been reporting, he or she will know about it. So that's a great suggestion, John. Nina, thanks. Good luck. Let us know. Call back sometime and let me know if you find anything out. I'd love to know because I've never heard of that before.
Me too. That's a new one on me.
Yeah. Thanks, Nina. Jerry in Williams Bay, let's go to you. Hi, Jerry.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
I did a burn on my potato garden, and I'm wondering if that's a good thing. I burned all the, you know, everything on top.
Oh, so you got rid of, that's how you got rid of your plant.
Yep.
Did you have any disease in that area at all?
Not yet.
Okay, but I mean, do you burn every year?
No, this is the first year that I've done it, but sometimes the weeds kind of got ahead of me.
Okay.
So I thought, I just burned it about 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
So
I doubt that you're going to have a problem. I'm not saying I would suggest doing that again, but you could rake up whatever debris is left and maybe compost it in a separate compost pile.
I don't think it's going to create a problem.
I don't think the amount of ash you're going to get from some weeds and a little debris left over from the potatoes from last year is going to create a problem. Yeah. I think just go with it. I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Yeah, she probably burned up some seeds, weed seeds.
Possibly, yeah. Who knows? She may have actually helped a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
There might be people that argue against that because it changes the pH somewhat, but it just doesn't sound like there's enough there to worry about.
No. Well, let's go to Lisa in Madison next. Lisa, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for your shows, always informative and helpful. So here's my question is about potting soil, you know, that you buy at the store.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been looking in the past few years for just regular potting soil, and they all seem to have fertilizer added to it, extended release. You don't have to do anything for 3 or 4 months and so on. But I'd like to have my own, just regular potting soil, and add my own fertilizer when I want to. Which is it? What's better?
You're into the debate of whether you want to be fully organic or not in what you're growing. There's so little synthetic fertilizer in some of the most famous potting soils or potting mixes that it's you're not organic when you're using it, but it's just a minimal amount. So if you're talking about being an organic gardener, you couldn't use it. But if you're talking about just hedging just a little bit, you probably could. There's a huge difference between potting soils. That's what concerns me about when you go to a store, because the term potting soil can mean almost anything.
Yeah.
And you want one that's really light and fluffy, probably contains quite a bit of peat moss. Some people are opposed to the use of peat moss even. So, I mean, it gets kind of tricky. But they have some perlite. Those are the little white balls that you see in the potting soil. But you can make your own. You can buy perlite. You can buy vermiculite. You can buy organic fertilizers. And you can use your own soil if you want from your an area that's got good soil in your home. And you can screen it so it's very fine, and then mix all those things together until it's nice, light, and fluffy. You can make your own potting soil, and that way you don't have to worry about when you're buying it whether it's good or not. I found potting soil sometimes that I've opened up that are like rock. When you lift up on the bag, it's really heavy, it's wet, it's just no good. So the answer is the term potting soil can cover just about anything, and you don't know necessarily what's in it. They don't necessarily tell you whether there are various products in it that could be harmful to your plants.
Well,
it's very, very tricky.
Let's say Lisa wants to go and mix her own. What kind of mixture percentages of do you kind of recommend? It doesn't have to be exact, I'm sure, but...
Well, about a third regular garden soil, about a third perlite, about a third... sphagnum peat moss, which peat moss is generally what people call sphagnum peat moss, which you can buy, and you can mix those together. Now, if you're going to use it on a deck, you would probably not want to use too much of the soil from your garden because it gets really heavy. But if you're going to use it in your garden, and the term potting soil, again, has various uses. I mean, you can use potting soil in the garden, and you can use it in pots. So that would be the typical formula. When I was a professional grower, we made our own potting soil, and typically the mix was soil, peat, and perlite.
Yeah, those three. And Lisa, you're in the Madison area, and there are some good locally owned garden centers that I know because I frequent them, that are locally owned, and they will have those materials for you for sure. I know because I've purchased them, so as a matter of fact. So good luck.
Well, thank you. Sounds like I'm going to have a new adventure this spring.
Are you going to grow things in pots or in the garden?
Both, but mainly I was asking about this for pots.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, yeah. Well, try to keep it as light as you can. They really get heavy once they get watered.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, there you go. Good luck. Thanks so much for calling. Here's another person. I'd love to hear what she's got to say toward the end of the growing season about how things went. Someone else, I think, emailed to say that for anyone who's having trouble growing tomatoes in pots, Ellis Benita from Muscadet, she recommends Purple Cow tomato potting soil.
And I don't know it.
Purple Cow, I think it's an organic soil. It is an organic potting soil.
Okay.
So it's probably got that mixture or something close to that mixture. That's one thing you can always do is look on the bag and see what kind of ingredients are listed on the bag.
Yeah. If it says organic, it's supposed to be organic. And I'm assuming that it is. It's just that when you go and buy potting soil, you don't know whether it's organic or not, and you don't know the various ingredients in it.
Yeah.
You just don't know. Even if they say just potting soil, and then they list some of the ingredients, there could be other things in there that they either don't know about or may have put in and don't really list it.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
People have to be careful. It's not as easy as everyone thinks, just going to the garden store, picking out potting soil. You want to get a good potting soil.
And what about the size? Frank emailed to ask what dimensions you recommend for a pot to plant a tomato plant in.
Well, I would say pretty much as large as you can get a hold of at a local center. I mean, big pots are better. At least I found they have.
Yeah.
Because you want an extensive root system. You want to support the plant right from the start. And you can do that with soft twine or a piece of cloth in a figure eight knot. And the larger the pot, it seems the bigger the plant will grow. There are determinate and indeterminate tomato plants. Determinate means that they'll only go to a certain size. So you could lower maybe the pot size a bit with a plant that is determinate. And with an indeterminate plant, you can cut off some of the foliage, some of the stems as they get too big, but your plant will generally be quite a bit larger. So you want a big pot.
Yeah, and the root system on those, I know just from growing some tomatoes in straw bales, at the end of the season, you break what's left of those straw bales open, and those roots will go all the way through the straw bale and even into the soil. They go down a long ways.
Most people don't realize that the root system on most plants is far more extensive than what you're seeing above the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. Jason and Nina, it's your turn. Hi, Jason.
Hi. Pretty soon I'm going to be starting my seedlings, and I'll be doing, tomatoes and a bunch of other stuff too. But I was wondering if I was to use my own mix of vermiculite and coconut core, would I need to supplement it with a fertilizer at some point, or will that get me through for a couple months until I can put them in the ground?
Well, you're talking about starting a variety of plants indoors, and they're usually started at different periods. Some seeds have to be started 8 to 10 weeks, even 12 weeks ahead of time. Others really shouldn't be started until 3, 4, 5 weeks ahead of time of your outdoor, depending on what kind of plant you're growing. If you're growing a warm weather plant, you want to wait till it's warm outside before you plant it or give it protection. And if you're growing something that can go out earlier, well, that's fine. Usually people are growing plants, the majority of people who grow plants indoors are growing the warmth-loving plants, but there's certainly a lot that you can grow ahead of time, like cabbage and so on, that don't need warmth. But the potting soil itself, as long as it's loose and airy and you're watering regularly. Once they get to a certain size, then you should start using dilute amounts of fertilizer. But you don't want to go overboard. The early stage of the plant, they really don't need much fertilizer. But as they begin to form a number of leaves, then definitely start adding some fertilizer to your waterings. Maybe every other watering, even third or fourth watering. Not a lot. Just watch your plants. They'll tell you. If they're growing well, you're doing well.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jason, for calling. Appreciate your call. Jan called to ask what you think of the what you think are the most reliable organic weed barriers.
I don't think that there's anything that will actually stop weeds from growing into your garden, because they have a way of going down and then up around your barrier. But you could try. Again, some people are opposed to the use of plastic, but you could try wood, plastics, various plastic barriers. Stones do work, but the weeds do grow through them, and they grow in them as well because, you know, soil blows around and you get some weeds in them. So there's no surefire way of stopping weeds either from blowing in or drifting in or being brought in by birds. But the barriers that you can use also include wood, just the way when you build a raised bed, you could anchor wood around your garden, but it's expensive. And so it's all a matter of how much money you have, how much energy, how much time, and whether you like the look of it.
Just going back to leaves for a minute, I would have 6-8 inches of leaves on the garden, and that was weeds do come through, but they are a heck of a lot easier to pull out and get rid of.
Much easier, and they stop most weeds, as you say, not all. And they're superb because over the period of the summer, they break down. I mean, they almost disappear by fall.
Yeah.
And that's just adding nutrients to your soil, and the worms just love leaves. They come in like crazy.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. Well, John, how's the book doing, by the way? Well, it's pretty new.
Well, it's so new, I don't know how it's doing. I know how my past books did, because I wrote three other cold climate gardening guides. And, in fact, I was on your show about roses.
Yeah.
And then there's one on trees and small shrubs and one on perennials.
Yeah.
And they all did very well. The perennial book did the best. That mm-hmm. was very popular at the time that we wrote it. And this one is, I mean, it's literally off the press.
Yeah, it's just off the press.
I can't tell you an honest answer to that because I don't know how well it's doing. I hope it will do as well as the perennial book.
Well, I'm hanging on to my copy, John. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate being on your show, and I appreciate the pastimes. And I wish you all the best.
We'll look forward to another visit. John Whitman, our guest, and John is the author of Fresh from the Garden, an organic guide to growing vegetables, berries, and herbs in cold climates, published by the University of Minnesota Press. Lots of fun. We'll get him back. We'll do this again. Monday, we'll talk about legal matters, how to find a good lawyer. Stay with us.